What is up, punks? This is Block Digest Orphan Block number one, and there is no block height because this was orphaned. So this is pretty much just a little short mini episode with a couple stories we couldn't squeeze into the last full episode. And we also, in addition to Janine, have a wild Chris Ellis today. So what's up, guys?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, so I don't really know what the hell to do here format-wise. It's just six things that I think would have made that episode way too long. Any chitter-chatter or anything anybody wants to bring up before we just dive into it?
I love the idea of the orphan block. I think I love what you're doing here. I think the idea is there's so much news to cover, you can't possibly cover it in one episode, so then you have like half episodes, like this is episode... What number would it be? Just add a 0.5 at the end.
I guess. I mean... Yeah, I can't think of anything else to do.
I mean, you're being thorough. I love it.
I think it's 221.5.
Welcome to 221.5, people. Let's hit it. What's the first thing on the list?
So this is, I think, a little bit of a development out of Iran that is pushing Bitcoin much further into the geopolitical realms. So they already last year or so implemented an actual licensing scheme where miners could register as a legitimate business that was also kind of a restriction on how much energy could be used for mining. And now President Rouhani is pretty much trying to get the Central Bank of Iran, the Energy Department, and their communications technology ministries to develop a cohesive strategy for mining. And specifically, another part of this is this was announced 2 days after a new bill was proposed in the parliament to require crypto exchanges to get a license from the Central Bank of Iran. And so this to me is they are trying to create a comprehensive regulatory framework here to allow this in the country in terms of a revenue source for them, but I think also strictly monitor and add these types of restrictions so that it can't become a vehicle for just massive capital flight, just get the benefits for the Iranian government and not have all those downsides they have to worry about. And I think, their hash rate share, at least based on the Bitcoin mining map maintained by CBCI, is 4% of the hash rate. So,
well, yeah, in relation to the stuff that's going on with Hong Kong, there's a lot more people talking about using Bitcoin for capital flight, which, as Alex Gladstein said, is a propaganda term invented by the state to criminalize doing with your money what people should be able to do with their money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I'm super interested to see what else is like a geopolitical kind of tool and how nation states respond to it. I think this is something that we've been following a lot on this show, and also I think we've been talking off air, and probably will focus a lot on the way China is going to respond to the existence of Bitcoin, now that we have this kind of recurring theme of repatriation of supply chains in manufacturing post COVID-19. It's possible that countries might want to bring some of the manufacturing home in Northern America and in Western countries in the EU. I think also in the context of Hong Kong. And I think Iran has always just been one of those areas where we wanted to focus on as a community, because it is sanctioned by the US government. along with North Korea, along with Russia. I think all of these aforementioned nation states you always want to pay attention. Actually, when I read the story, I didn't really know what to make of it exactly, because it looked as if, yes, they were trying to prevent capital flight, but on the other hand, states that are ostracized by the American financial system sort of have an incentive really to try to license and follow and track the wealth that's generated through mining and through crypto exchanges. So I wasn't really sure how to respond, and I think we should just pay attention to this as it develops.
I think this, with a lot of other stuff, is I think at this point it's pretty safe to say that we're going to see the anti-American axis, so to say, really start looking to Bitcoin as an option to get around capital restrictions. I mean, we've already kind of seen that play out in Venezuela, hints at it in North Korea, and the Russian government actually has hosting pads on a government-owned power plant to sell space for miners. I mean, I think it's pretty undeniable at this point that that's actually going to materialize. But this next one up, think this is a really interesting thing because not really any concrete details, but I still think there's a lot for us to talk about. This company Foundation Devices, which I have never heard of. I have no clue who is involved with this, and I know nothing about this company. I've seen get really active on Twitter, talking about open hardware designs, in Bitcoin, and kind of putting themselves out there as a new Bitcoin hardware company. But really, there's no concrete details or any designs or architecture specifications. There's really nothing except a post put up discussing the importance of open hardware. And I know you probably have a lot to say on that in general, Chris, but then the larger conversation we kind of touched on earlier, if you want to go into that.
Yeah, I think that it's. I'm just looking at their Twitter account now. So it's at Foundation DVCS, spelled in a kind of an interesting way. And they've only got 287 followers. The account doesn't look very old. It joined in March 2020. So it's a post-COVID Twitter account. And the article really sort of takes a position on how they believe that hardware wallets and hardware security should really be designed. So they're coming at it from a FOSS angle, which is that it should be free open source. We should be able to see inside of these devices, not just visibility wise, but I think they're advocating for actual open source hardware, even pointing out the fact that, with these SDM security chips, that in order for you to know if there's a vulnerability, you would need to sign an NDA with that company that issues it. Never mind where it's actually manufactured, namely in the Far East. And this is goes back to the point of repatriation, which we can revisit again in this segment. And of course, they also point out that if a government works with STM to insert a backdoor, you might never even find out about it. And these are all legitimate concerns. I think that they put up the need for transparency and open source as if that were really the main solution to this problem. Of course, it comes with its own set of problems. If it's open source and everybody can see into it, you're actually increasing the number of people that can really know about it and attack it, and you perhaps have to be a little bit more quicker on your responses as a security company. Obscurity through obscurity, or security through obscurity, I should say, that does come with certain benefits. It gives you time advantages. If only a certain number of people know about it, if they have to be professional and apply for an NDA and have a company set up, etc., it just means that perhaps the only people that are going to be able to attack this device are professionals, and we want those attackers to be of a professional class, let's say. Having an open source hardware wallet will, of course, give you certain advantages, and a larger number of people that can support the project, perhaps more eyeballs on the device, as long as you do your developer relations properly and you actually run a proper active community there on the back end. But of course, it gives advantage to attackers too. So I don't think this is a binary issue. I can't tell just from the small amount of information here what gearing up for, but I do think that there is lots of space coming up to talk about really the suitability of the companies working in hardware wallets. We mostly just have two main contenders at the moment, which is Ledger and Trezor. There's other devices out there as well, which are less prominent and known. But I think post Bitcoin halvening, we're going to get a lot of new people into Bitcoin who are not technical, who are going to be needing better information about this. So yeah, watch this space, I think. Go take a check out the article, and you can let us know what you think.
The thing that I immediately looked at, because you said it's not a well-known company, so I looked at like one of the people we do or can look at from the article, which is the co-founder slash CEO of this new company. And so he also doesn't have a huge following, but he lists as being his credentials that he has a master's, he has an MBA from Harvard Business School and a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering from Boston University. The thing that stuck out to me though is that he claims he was the COO of Obelisk Inc., which was
Okay.
apparently the US leading cryptocurrency mining hardware producer. And then after that, he worked at Nebulous, which apparently was behind Sia, and I guess that was like the holding company or something for Obelisk and Sia, which if anyone remembers what Sia is, that was one of the storage blockchain projects, which I am not a fan of,
It
but
still
maybe.
is. It still
Okay.
is.
Well, at least
Yeah.
that they have actual hardware design experience then.
Well, yeah, he does.
But yeah, it's, this is kind of a really nuanced issue that I think constantly gets like turned into a binary thing in this space. When I first started using hardware devices, I had a Trezor, and I was very much convinced of the logic, keep it 100% open source. But we have these architectural designs that are more and more common these days in hardware wallets, where you can take that closed chip, and in the way you architect the device, you effectively just make it additive security. Like, even if that is broken in some way, that doesn't just break everything completely. That just reduces it now to the original security of just the open chip. And so I think, now that we're well down the road of that kind of architecture being developed, I don't think that the everything open is such a binary thing in this type of context. And like you touched on, Chris, I'm kind of worried about like how it's actually architected and implemented, and then how that is sold to customers. Because as far as I'm concerned, this next wave up, like this market cycle, is going to be a shit show of new hardware companies, started by who knows who, just selling shit to Bitcoin users, because there is no way that the existing competent companies could just scale to meet all of the demand, and both technically, but just socially in terms of marketing. And so like that is a real big worry of mine going forward, and I really don't know how to deal with it. Because it's like, who can pay attention to all of that or assess all of that and then get all of that information circulating widely enough?
Yeah, I mean, we have a business cycle, so to speak, in Bitcoin, in our own little microeconomy. I mean, normally that's a term that's used in by financial institutions to describe upward and downward movement of gross domestic product, right? But we have our own sort of movements in crypto, because we have these kind of halvenings every 4 years, and there's the sort of the adoption comes in waves, really. When you and I got involved, I think it was around 2012, 13, when the engineers had already entered this category, people who knew a little bit about code but didn't necessarily code for a living. We were somewhat technical, and then the next wave of people were largely sort of speculators and traders, and they, of course, were not oblivious to the issues technically, but certainly were not technical people. And now I think as we continuing to get more and more people into the space, we're definitely outside of the range of the experts, and perhaps they don't even know. Now you're sort of entering into sort of Dunning-Kruger territory, where they don't even know what they don't know.
But it's like, you know, I just keep thinking back to the whole Citadel time traveler meme post on Reddit, and the whole part of that story about governments in Africa just putting phones in everybody's hands to use Bitcoin, and that homogenous device ecosystem just gets wrecked. And like that's totally a possible thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, telling people to just manage their money on their mobile devices, which are not designed to be secure. I mean, look at how hard it's been for computer scientists to even come up with secure hardware, you know, hardware that's meant to be secure. I mean, let alone a phone which is designed to broadcast its location and share as much as possible. It's almost a contradiction in terms trying to secure a mobile phone.
Yeah, and so like that, you jump to everybody using these devices, and it's like if that ecosystem doesn't check itself properly competitively, then that same type of risk exists even for the special hardware.
Yeah, there was an interesting point that Nick Szabo made. I can't remember. It was in relation to one of the many, many stories about SMS 2FA being broken because of SIM swaps. And he said that, you know, we can't, to some degree, we can't really blame the phone companies because there was never actually a point where they accepted the responsibility for phones to be used as, you know, second factor, you know, security devices. That was never supposed to be, that was never a plan. And I agree with that to some extent, but then again, they're also still trying to promote phones being secure in other ways, and that's not really holding up at the end of the day.
Yeah, I guess I really don't have anything else to add. You guys want to move along unless you do?
Yeah, let's go.
Con base.
Yeah. So this is just a quick update. So in the last episode or two, I covered the hash rate futures that FTX, a derivatives exchange, launched. And apparently, I didn't know this, they have an ERC-20 token, like the STO or whatever acronym you want to call it these days, to raise liquidity. And they have announced that they are using Coinbase Custody International to handle the custodying of those tokens now. Now, based on the announcement, it looks like just that ERC-20 token is being custodied by Coinbase for FTX. But you know, this is a dynamic I think that traders and service users should really pay attention to as more of these kind of hardened custody solutions pop up that businesses are going to use. Pay attention to what solutions the business you use is using for these type of custody services, because this can very well wind up being a big problem in the long term if too few of these services get used by most businesses. That can wind up being a dangerous concentration of a Bitcoin in a single honeypot. And yeah, that's not a good thing, systemically.
Hey, do you need a custodian for your custodian?
Yeah, apparently we do. But yeah, so next up, this is actually a really interesting thing that could lead to a legacy company who tried to dip its toes in this space getting in deep shit. So I shouldn't have to explain to anybody the two big phases of GPU consumption for mining when they were first used for Bitcoin, and then shitcoins in the last couple years. Well, Nvidia and other graphics cards companies took advantage of that. Some even started selling units that were not passing quality control for actual gaming use, for mining anyway, at cheaper prices. And apparently, through the entire period of 2017 to 2018, the CEO, the CFO, and senior vice president all actively misled investors in the sense of downplaying and in some meetings not even mentioning the share of their revenue growth that was due to cryptocurrency mining, and actively misleading and trying to frame things to investors as if the huge spike in revenue they were seeing in 2017 was actually sustainable demand from gamers, due to, esports and just that entire scene exploding in size and becoming a real market. When the reality was, most of that revenue spike was due to cryptocurrency miners, which was obviously not going to be sustained demand. And they have just had an amended lawsuit filed in California in the last few days, despite the original one being a few years old. And they are going after NVIDIA for violation of the US Exchange Act in materially misleading and misrepresenting investors. So, yeah, this is going to be pretty entertaining.
So these are mostly altcoin miners, right? Because obviously GPU mining hasn't been a thing in Bitcoin for a long, long time. So if Litecoin goes up, they should be okay and they can return to profit or what?
Nope. Litecoin's ASIC'd, if I recall correctly now. But yeah, I mean, this is I think this is exactly why we still haven't seen big companies like AMD or Intel and such try to really jump into the mining sector of this space. Because, yeah, what company wants to have that kind of volatility in revenue and have to answer to shareholders for that?
Yeah, I mean, it could just take the any incidental profits it makes as gravy and not even report on it. But I think at the moment these are allegations, right? And we don't have a verdict.
Well, pretty much the argument being made by the shareholders is that if they had known the revenue spike was related to this, they probably would have sold shares because they would have looked at this as an overvaluation of the company with the corresponding share price increase. And so, yeah, that I
Yeah.
think they have a pretty solid case on.
I see.
I mean, 'cause I don't know, I swear that didn't we even talk about them making a lot of money from selling GPUs that were being used for cryptocurrency mining? Like, was it, I feel like it wasn't like a secret.
I think everybody in this space, at least, saw exactly what was going on there. Yeah.
'Cause like, I mean, any investor, if they have money in this company and they see such a huge spike in revenue, like, did they really think, oh, there's just so many more gamers who need GPUs out of nowhere?
Yeah, I mean it's I have nothing really to say except they were probably boomers.
That's age discrimination, mate.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, well, cryptocurrency mining is kind of a game. It's like a digital lottery.
Well, now they're selling illegal gambling tickets. Uh-oh, you just caused more problems. But yeah, I think that this dynamic is probably why we haven't seen any pre-existing tech companies get into this space, and probably why we won't for a while. Because yeah, I mean, just really look at this situation and just imagine the cost benefit analysis that like a CEO is going to make. Does he want to create this kind of potential shit between the company and investors for transitory gains? Ah, man. Alrighty. So, are we ready to quickly gloss through something that I really don't want to talk about, but feel compelled to anyway?
Let's talk about Satoshi.
So, Ira Kleiman has filed a motion to sanction Craig. And I'm just going to mostly look at the table of contents for the most part. This was filed on the docket on the 21st of May. But yeah, it is just a giant summary of all the different ways that he has lied, provably just by contradicting himself. factual background in the table of contents. Wright has repeatedly lied under oath and submitted forged evidence in a failed effort to avoid trial and win this case through dispositive motions. Wright provides perjurious testimony and forged evidence in an effort to avoid compliance with court orders. Wright submitted new lies and forgeries directly to the court to avoid sanctions and to prevent the plaintiffs from proving their case. It's literally just like the perfect bullet point of like all of the lies that he has been caught into. One of the more recent ones that are hilarious is trying to actually enter statements from his wife validating his involvement in Bitcoin, and then his wife on the witness stand going, "I don't remember that."
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Wait, he called her as a witness?
Yep.
Wow.
And at this point, I don't think I need to explain to listeners why I don't give a shit about any of this. But if you're looking for really hilarious reading material over the week, here's 25 pages of that right here in the show notes for you.
Well, the funniest part is that even with those 25 pages, there was still more lies that were pointed out just in the last couple of days because, you know, some early miner decided to risk their OPSEC and sign a statement showing that they not only controlled a bunch of the addresses that fake Toshi was claiming to hold, but that clearly they were not owned by him.
Yeah.
So it's like wrote 25 pages and the thing that makes the news is a anonymous miner coming out of the dark to call him a fraud again.
Yeah, at this point, this is for months in my mind. It's no longer when is the good enough evidence going to appear. It's when is the judge going to stop extending the benefit of the doubt to somebody a retarded child could see is lying.
Yeah, and they're still trying to escape it. There's a Calvin Iyer claiming that, no, it's not a minor. It's a disgruntled former N-Chain employee who, you know, you would think would not be stupid enough if they had access to these keys to attempt to just take the money. Instead, they decided to, you know, write a statement. Like, it's so ridiculous. It's such a ridiculous theory. No one's going to believe that. And also, I mean, that makes him look like a fool that he gave some random N-Chain employee that he clearly didn't trust access to some extremely valuable keys, not only in terms of the Bitcoin that they had access to, but also in terms of the historical mysticism around them.
Mm-hmm. And I don't even know. Isn't their story still that they don't have those private keys yet? And wouldn't this new story show that they in fact do and are therefore lying about something different?
Yeah, I mean, it apparently that means that the keys not only, you know, spontaneously appeared in the last couple of days, but they were given, the access was given to an N-Chain employee, and the N-Chain employee decided to rebel against them and write a message. It's quite a interesting story.
But without taking the coins.
Yeah, apparently he, you know, the employee was like, yeah, didn't, I mean, not, just to be clear, we're all making a joke out of this because this is so difficult, or so stupid.
But... Oh, no. My official position is that he is Satoshi for now, right? So, like, let's that be clear. Dun, silence. Dun, dun, dun.
Well, I was just having an existential debate in my head of whether I should just ban you from the server forever after that. I think right,
so.
It's,
I either
think
get
it's
sued for defamation
it.
Or I get a permaban so the Bitcoin mumble. Shit. That's a tough call right there.
Why haven't I gotten a permaban for pineapple pizza?
Well, it's not quite as severe. Not quite. Close, though.
Really?
Really close.
But when I told you about the pineapple pizza, you very loudly barfed. You didn't do that one. I guess Satoshi doesn't make you want to barf?
It put me in a greater state of shock. It really did. Alrighty.
In fact, it should be compounded because Satoshi said that he liked pineapple pizza.
Oh, Oh my god, why did you do that to me? Alrighty though. Yeah, so last up, movements out of Trezor to form a slip, their internal version of a BIP for proof of UTXO ownership for hardware wallets, doing different automated signing operations without manual approval every time. And so I think it was actually like 2 years ago, Gregory Sanders pointed out that there are kind of a few nuanced ways in an automated system like that where you could defraud somebody by selectively withholding or changing details about a specific input in a transaction, because there's really no way for a hardware device to figure out whether they own a specific input or not in a fully encompassing way. And he proposed the idea of kind of effectively having a signature over inputs provided in these types of, the biggest example is a coin join transactions, to have a, pretty much what you would do is you would take some information like the script in the UTXO or something, and then concatenate that and hash it with a key from your device. So like a special BIP32 path that isn't used for anything. And then that way, when a hardware wallet is provided a transaction, it could take all of the signature proofs and then check them against the actual private key that it has, which is a part of this proof construction process, and be able to instantly and cryptographically show these inputs are a part of my wallet and these ones are not, and know which inputs to sign. And be able to kind of handle that in a much more accurate way. And then also, in addition to just the UTXO data as well, you can have a coin join coordinator have like a unique nonce that is part of this as well, so that you can't have these types of things replayed in future coin join rounds. Let's say you provide a proof for something and then you end up failing out of the coin join round, that would leave that proof open to play games in the future. And so they're kind of working right now and looking for outreach and kind of standardizing this into a slip. And I'm kind of torn because honestly, this is absolutely one of those things that needs to be standardized. But in my experience, when Trezor Labs runs off and air quotes standardizes things in slips, they tend to do so without really thinking or caring about compatibility with other hardware or other software in the space. They just do it considering Trezor devices and then don't care. And so I'm kind of hoping that on this one, they don't do something that pretty much forces a incompatibility issue across different pieces of hardware, because they just do this to go look at the standard we made and don't really think about anybody's products besides their own. So definitely a necessary thing, but I'm kind of skeptical about how this is going to play out.
Well, my question is, I mean, this kind of thing would be useful in a wallet that actually had coin management features. Does that mean that Trezor is going to get that?
I hope so. I mean, it's like, I'm hoping, looking at this, like, I'm kind of struggling to see a way where this could be standardized. And like any kind of inefficiency in resource or implementation use wouldn't even be possible to make something that could cause a lot of big problems for like other devices. But, you know, track record and such.
And by the way, the Trezor hardware wallet does give you coin management. It's just that their software through the browser doesn't allow that. But you kind of use it with Electrum, you get access to individual inputs.
Yeah, that's what I mean, but I would still wish that they had some coin management stuff in their default software wallet.
Yeah. I remember a couple years ago, I yelled at both Trezor and Ledger people about that, and their excuse was that it was too advanced for that's such nonsense. Like the idea that you can't walk a non-technical person through the idea of an output means that that person is too stupid to understand getting change back from cash. I don't believe there is a thing as a person that stupid. You just need to take the time to walk them through it. But yeah, I guess that was the last story on the docket for the first Orphan Block.
Short and sweet show.
Right. So we got any short and sweet final thoughts for the listeners?
Well, I don't know if you saw it, but Vitalik made this very wordy poll about if you had some kind of initiative. I'm assuming this is some hypothetical consensus decision that he's plotting out, but he said suppose 90% of a group surveyed supported something and 10% opposed it, but the 90% were basically the same person who was copied using a Star Trek replicator 30 minutes ago. Whereas the remaining 10% were all separate individual people, should the proposal be implemented? And my favorite response to that was, you need a civil protection mechanism. I suggest proof of work.
Very good.
Kind of funny how every time people try to find a different solution for that, it always comes back to proof of work.
Yeah, I would say my final thought would just be to point people to the response from Trezor. I think Ledger might have made one already to the rumors that were circulating over the weekend that the e-shop of data of their customers, including potentially personally identifiable information such as name and address, physical address, I mean, was leaked. It's turned out that it was a hoax, but it was not looking good for a few hours there over the weekend. It looked as though it was possible that the personal information of customers of Trezor and Ledger that were using various e-shop platforms and e-commerce platforms had been leaked. And it perhaps just gave us pause for a moment to think about the potential vulnerabilities that perhaps people haven't weighed up. And so go check out Trezor's blog post. It was posted yesterday, the 25th of May. And perhaps think when you're ordering these hardware wallets, perhaps try to give an employer's address and use a pseudonym or something like that. So I think most of these vendors should facilitate you in doing this and should not deny you not using your real name.
That's good to hear. And maybe, at the least, vendors that weren't managing that information properly might actually look into how to do that now.
Yeah,
Or be
I mean,
like me and get all of your hardware wallets in them and never
yeah,
order anything.
that's very valid. It's valid.
Well, I don't really have a serious final thought. All I'm going to say is that when crazy women on TV go say that they did a bad thing when they didn't, therefore it's okay for us to do a bad thing, that's not how morality and ethics work. So catch you
Are
later,
you calling me
punks.
crazy?
No, Junie, not you. catch you later, punks.
Bye.
Bye.
Hele Hallerstein sier min lyd. Mosner, det trenger et sjø som trud. Ingen fortsett i sinne. Jeg sner i de søkmål, ja.